This week on Come Receive the Light from the Orthodox Christian Network, a story about taking a life and putting it into a printed record.
We developed a routine where we'd meet at one local Starbucks or another, and I would interview him, and I'd say, well, tell me, you know, Dad, put some meat on the bone here. What happened that day? And he'd say, well, you know, your grandmother moved here and went there. And I'd say, no, come on, what did she say? And he'd try to remember it in English, and he couldn't say anything. And then I'd say, well, tell me in Greek what they said.
Mm-hmm. The story we're going to share is not only fascinating, but hopefully it will trigger some thoughts in your mind about how to record your own family history.
Once he started doing it in Greek, all the dialogue came out, and I was there with a laptop racing as fast as I could to write down this dialogue that somehow saying it in Greek, it sparked it all to come out.
There are so many hidden family stories, and unfortunately, many of them don't come out. But we have a wonderful illustration today of how a family put together a plan and created a printed resource that we'll talk with you about that shared an incredible family story. Welcome to another edition of Come Receive the Light. I'm Mike Trout, and I am very excited about today's broadcast because it follows along the line of some thinking I've had for a number of years about this subject of recording your family history. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos, and we are a weekly visit. If you're brand new to the ministry and to this particular broadcast, welcome. I invite you to go to our website at myocn.net if you're not there already and find out more about this incredible ministry that reaches around the world in so many different ways. And you might want to become a financial partner with us, a team member, someone who helps us do all that we do. And maybe you have an idea or two that you'd like to share with us about additional ministry we could possibly be involved in. Just go to our website, myocn.net, click on the Donate Now button on the homepage for information about how you can join with us, and there's also a Contact Us Now page that will give you the opportunity to get in touch, and you can join in a dialogue that we have on this particular subject and many other subjects through our blog called The Sounding. There's a link for the blog page right there on our homepage. Again, it's myocn.net. Before we get to our feature conversation, though, we're going to continue our series on the subject of Great Lent with a conversation between our host, Father Chris, and Metropolitan Tikhon.
There's an article that I referred to, Gleanings and Research by Neil McQueen, that speaks about the life benefits of regular church attendance. He goes on to say it helps our children rebound from depression 70% faster. It dramatically reduces the risk of committing suicide. These are very serious responses to a study done by Duke University, Indiana University, University of Michigan, the Center for Disease Control, the Barner Research Group, Pew, National Gallup, I mean, on and on and on. And you and I now, and the rest of our listeners, find ourselves now at the third week of Great Lent, which is dedicated to the adoration of the precious and the life-giving cross. I wonder if you could give us your reflections on this special feast day of the Church.
Thank you, Father. Yes, I think this third Sunday, of course, being placed in the middle of the fast is also a wonderful source of strength for our Lenten journey. And I think it's important to reflect on some of the difficult subjects you mentioned just now, the suicide, depression, all these challenges that face us in society, because I think the cross is really an image for us and a reality for us as Orthodox Christians to help us deal with those difficulties. And of course, Great Lent is oftentimes, I think when I talk to people, there's often a sense that a Great Lent as a whole, the Lenten journey, is something like somewhat of a dark time, a time of purple colors and, mm-hmm. and black vestments and subdued lighting and fasting and self-denial. And those are certainly all elements of the Great Fast, but I think that misses the point of the fast itself, that there is a tremendous sense of joy throughout the season of Lent, even in those moments for example, the Sunday of the Last Judgment, which is a very, in a sense, grim preparatory Sunday, even there you sense there's images of the light that is coming at Holy Pascha. And we begin the first week of Great Lent, the hymns almost universally refer to beginning the fast with joy, with eagerness, striving to purify ourselves to reach the Feast of Holy Pascha. And I think the cross is placed in the middle of the fast as a further reminder of this, that we're called really by our Lord to find the glory of God even in the middle of the darkness and the death that perhaps surrounds us in our communities, maybe affects us even in our families or in our own hearts where we struggle with passions. The cross is really there to, I think, inspire us to find the joy of the resurrection even in the midst of the shame of the cross.
What do we say, Vladika, what do we say to the naysayers who would say to you, this is the midpoint of Great Lent, and you are now presenting me with a cross that's empty that actually reminds me of the death of my Savior? How do we come to turn that? Because many times when we speak, I know priests have said it many times, and even some hierarchs have said it too, this is our time of refreshment. We're now seeing the cross. We're at midpoint. But a naysayer could say, wait a minute, midpoint of what? Look at it. The cross is empty, and it represents Christ's death. Can you expound on that a little bit?
Well, I think the Church has wonderfully helped us in that, the hymn writers of the Church, because if you look carefully at the services for that Sunday, the Matins service especially, the canon for the cross, the Irmosi, which are the introductory hymns that the choir sings or that the reader would read, are in fact the same Irmosi that we sing on Holy Pascha at the Matins canon. So we don't normally sing them in church in our modern days, but they are in the books there, and they're sung in the same tone one, as the resurrectional service. So that in and of itself gives us a sort of a liturgical representation of the reality of the resurrection that is coming through the cross, because we cannot get to the resurrection without the cross. The naysayers, I suppose, can never be convinced by arguments or anything we might say, but right. I think they have to be drawn into that journey towards Lent, and I think our liturgical hymns are really one of the most important tools for us to do that. And I would actually encourage anyone listening, if they don't have a copy of the Lenten Triodion or the other liturgical books of the Church, it's a wonderful tool to have, even in the family, to attend the services, but then perhaps to prepare by looking at what the hymns will be saying
right beforehand,
and to reflect on them afterwards as well.
Sure. Well, let's go to that since you mentioned it. Let's go to the first hymn that is chanted in the fifth tone at the Great Vespers on Saturday evening, just prior to the Adoration of the Cross. It says, "Shine, Cross of the Lord, shine with the light of thy grace upon the hearts of those who honor thee. With love inspired by God, we embrace thee, O desire of all the world. Through thee our tears of sorrow have been wiped away. We have been delivered from the snares of death and have passed over to unending joy. Show us the glory of thy beauty, and grant to us, your servants, the reward of our abstinence. For we entreat with faith thy rich protection and great mercy." Thank you, Vladika.
We have three more installments from this series on the subject of Great Lent. And, of course, there are resources on the subject on our website. We have a web store. When you go to the website at myocn.net, click on the web store, and you will find a number of books that deal with Great Lent and how you can make it a much more meaningful time in your life and in the life of your family and those around you. That's our web store on the website for the Orthodox Christian Network at myocn.net. And now with our feature conversation for this week, here again is Father Chris.
It's a pleasure to welcome a father and son team to our show today, Sam and Peter Stamatis from Chicago, who recently wrote a book called Dandelions for Dinner. Now, I've eaten many dandelions in my time, especially my younger years, that my yaya, my grandmother, used to make them for us. So I'm sure this is going to be an interesting conversation. Peter, let's start off with you. Tell us about you, your dad, and how you came to write a book together.
Absolutely. My father had retired around the year 2000, 2001, and began spending with my mom his winters in Florida. And on a whim, my sister and I suggested to him that he tell us about his childhood, which was something really he had never spoken about before. We knew that he was born in 1933, and we knew that he came to the United States in 1946, but we really didn't know what had happened during those first 13 years of his life. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon he started writing down on pads of paper about his youth in a town in southwestern Greece called Gargaliani, and about his life in that coastal town. And slowly what unfolded on these pieces of yellow legal paper was the story of a family living through very difficult times in this small town in southwestern Greece. And not only the story of this family, but really the story of so many other families all around Greece at that time, and really the story of how this small country suffered during the 30s and then during occupation in World War II, and then perhaps worst of all, during the Civil War that followed.
Yes. Sam, let me go to you. What was it like for you to write this book? I mean, was it difficult to remember, or did you feel as if it was like yesterday when these things were happening?
Well, certain things were like yesterday. For instance, the Adartes, the guerrillas, captured Gargaliani after 2 days of fighting. Once the lines broke, the Adartes moved into the town and began gathering everybody, and we all were kind of jailed into the local high school. What happened was they wanted to separate those that had guerrilla affiliations and those that were with the opposite side, and the selection was crude. Mm-hmm. We went in front of a committee, and we were let go because we did not belong either with the left or the right, and they didn't know what to do with us, so they let us go. On the way home, we encountered many people lying on the street, and finally reaching home, we found our home sacked, and those are recollections that are quite fresh in my mind. And what happened was things like that led to other details that were put in the archives of my mind, and they kind of came out. They were prompted to come out, and that's how the book was written, around all these things.
How old were you then, Sam?
I was 12 years old when it, in 1944, I think I was 12 or 11 years old.
Very fresh then, and, very fresh.
Yes.
Well, Peter, let me go to you for a second. I mean, how much of this story was new to you as you worked on the book? I mean, as you start delving into these subjects, sometimes it's very difficult, and we don't hear all the details in the beginning, but talk to us about that.
Well, it was all new to me. 99% of it was new to me. Yeah. I knew that they were there, and I knew that there was a war, and I knew it was tough times, and that was about it. And when my father began writing some of these things down, he had written them in very general terms. You know, we went there, and here's what happened. And this began, for the two of us, an interview process where we developed a routine where we'd meet at one local Starbucks or another, and I would interview him, and I'd say, well, tell me, you know, Dad, put some meat on the bone here. What happened that day? And he'd say, well, you know, your grandmother moved here and went there. And I'd say, no, come on, what did she say? And he'd try to remember it in English, and he couldn't say anything. And then I'd say, well, tell me in Greek what they said. Mm-hmm. And then he would recount. Once he started doing it in Greek, all the dialogue came out, and I was there with a laptop racing as fast as I could to write down this dialogue that somehow saying it in Greek, it sparked it all to come out.
Interesting. Sam, why had you not chosen to talk to your children about what transpired then?
When we came to this country in 1946, we were welcomed. We were the first Greeks to come out of Greece after the war. Mm-hmm. And we had a big story to say. And we went around our relatives' homes, and we expounded a variety of items that were of interest. And after a while, all that kind of grew cold as we acclimated into our new environment. We had other vital things to take care of, like getting jobs, working, and mm-hmm. things of that sort. And it wasn't done on purpose, as far as I remember, you know, as far as I recollect. When my kids were growing up, I would perhaps mention it, but the apathy that I got back from them, sort of cooled me off, right. You know.
Well, it wasn't as if it was a happy story.
It wasn't a happy story, no. Right. Father was suffering, you know. Right. I mean, what can I say?
Right. Well, sometimes we don't share, you know, mm-hmm. those stories that give us the most pain, even though those stories, those life
right.
experiences are probably what prepare us for difficulties mm-hmm. in the future. And when we feel it's
absolutely.
Right, we know to bring it out.
Absolutely.
Peter, I wonder what was the most shocking part of the story for you? What event really surprised you?
I have to say that learning how close my father, his brother, my yaya and papu lived to dying was something that I really never truly understood. Greece in the 30s and in the 40s was a place of starvation. In Greece during World War II, some 300,000 or so people died of starvation. And it was particularly surprising to learn just how exposed people who lived in urban areas were to dying from starvation. These were people who were successful, people who had various jobs. In Athens, there were professionals and so forth. But when the war broke out, those food lines were cut, those food sources were cut off from the urban areas, and those people found themselves totally vulnerable to starvation. On the contrary, it was especially surprising to learn how the humble people out in the villages, people who maybe had a little bit of land or had some animals, were somewhat self-sufficient, and how much better they were able to withstand the trials and tribulations of war. That's number one. The second thing that I found very surprising is how this one family, like so many other families, lived through so much, yet when they came here, they did not spend the rest of their lives lamenting what a tough time they lived through in Greece. They sort of put that in a box, and they put that box up on a shelf, and they rolled up their sleeves, and they dug in their heels, and they got to work here. And it's such a testament to their character that they then, in getting to work, you know, my father came to the United States when he was 13, and because of the strong woman in his life, the strong parents in his life, but particularly his mother, my grandmother, and her strength, he attended the University of Illinois a decade later and graduated with a degree in electrical engineering. And so the fact that this family was able to leave behind what had happened and just move forward here, I think was very surprising.
Well,
me.
It is
pleasantly surprising.
It is an amazing story, as we've learned of other people who have come over from Greece at a very young age, having gone through these tremendous difficulties. I don't know how Americans would survive something of that nature. I hope we never have to. But clearly, this was a generation that maybe we won't see them again. We just may not see that generation again. Peter, let me ask you this. I mean, obviously, you sound very close to your father and you respect him. Tell us about working on the book and how it may or may not have changed your relationship with your dad.
I think my father and I have been sort of close from the beginning. I always remember being close to my father. And so it was a particular delight that we spent all this time together working on the book. And it became our own little project. And while it was fun having such a project, it was very enlightening, again, to learn about really the depth of his character, the depth of a character of a person that turns out to be much deeper than you ever thought it was. So as a young person with a family, right, I see that, you know, and I have the bumps in the road that I suppose any person in his 40s with a wife and children might have. And when those come along, they just seem to pale in comparison to what that generation was able to conquer, right?
Certainly they do. Sam, the last line in your memoir is, "Indeed, with every cross in life, there is a resurrection." How do you think your childhood shaped your own relationship with God? Because obviously you've gone through life with some incredible journeys.
Yes. God has been a fundamental cornerstone in our lives. And that was prompted by my grandfather, who was a priest, and of course, my mother. We went through a series of hardships, and each hardship, God was always with us. Mm-hmm. We felt it, and it was a matter of waiting for the resurrection to occur.
Yes.
And we have had many, many, many resurrections.
Mm-hmm. Peter, let me ask you, Peter, one final question, because we could talk for a long time. I know, first of all, that your book, Dandelions for Dinner, is available for people to purchase. How do they do that, Peter? Tell us where they can get it.
They can get it from our website, which is dandelionsfordinner.com. And if they order from there, a buyer gets an autographed copy of the book. Otherwise, of course, Amazon.com and Amazon and Barnes & Noble and BarnesandNoble.com and your favorite bookseller.
Very good. Very good. Peter, one final question. What message does your father's life and his faith, obviously, have not only for you, for your generation, but also your children's generation to come?
In a lot of ways, it's a reminder of the capacity that people have to endure tough times. It seemed this family, when times were darkest, through their faith, they as my dad just said, they prayed, they hoped, and something would come in to swoop and get them to the next marker in life. So this story and the message of my father's life is the power of perseverance, the power of hope, the power of faith. And in so many ways, the book is a story of America and the power of America and the need for America and the world, because in the darkest times, they had in the back of their mind, you know, we're not going to be here forever. We're going to go to this place called America where things are going to be better, where we'll have opportunity, when we'll work. And as a result of working, we'll get some benefit. In Greece, they worked and worked and worked and got crumbs.
Right.
And there was the idea that they would work and their work would bring benefit. It would bring compensation. It would bring the ability to progress in life. And I think at the end of the day, the story, my father's story, is really the story of his mother. And it's a story of a strong woman and what this strong, faithful woman was able to do to get her family through very tough times. And it was, yes, it was prayer, but it was also she used her head. She was crafty when she had to be and did what she had to do to get her family to survive. And at the end of the day, it is a testament to her.
Very good. Sam and Peter Stamatis, the authors of the book Dandelions for Dinner, which you can purchase by going to their website, which was mentioned in this program, and also, of course, through Amazon. Thank you so much for being with us today. It's a tremendous testimony, not only to who you are, but also to your faith. Thank you, gentlemen, very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That website that Peter mentioned just a couple of minutes ago is dandelionsfordinner.com, and we'll have a link for that on our website. You can also purchase the book via our web store on myocn.net, and any purchase you make through the web store generates a donation back to the ministry. That's on myocn.net. By the way, if you saw the promotional material about this week's broadcast, you noticed that there was going to be a conversation about religious persecution in Pakistan. We didn't have time for that, but we will put that up on the website as a special link. Just go to the homepage and you'll find it. Thank you for your prayer support and your financial support. Thanks to our host, Father Christopher Metropoulos, and our executive producer, Ann Dankert. I'm Mike Trout. Join us again next week, and remember to always have faith in what you listen to.